Hello and welcome to the AV Forums podcast, returning on Monday the 14th of August 2017. And joining me on this edition, assistant editor Steve Withers.
Suck my fat one, you cheap dime store hood.
News editor Mark Hodgkinson has had to divert at the last minute. He just realised it's his anniversary. Audio reviewer Ed Selly.
A pile of shit has a thousand eyes.
And special, this is the way the podcast is going to go this week. And special guest Mark Buttright.
I'm in the prime of my youth.
Good for you. So Ed, you took it literally and broke a leg. Well done.
Yeah.
Is it any better?
Yes. Yesterday, so Thursday, my flexicast, which I'd had on for 13 days, came off, and they were sufficiently pleased with my progress that I haven't had another cast put on. Oh. It still can't take any weight, so it's not like I'm disappointed to report that I'm not actually the Wolverine. But I have been able to do without a second cast, which means at least I'm balanced and at least I can get some movement back into the ankle joint. And hopefully in 4 weeks' time, I'll be signed off and I can crack on with the business of learning to walk again.
All right. So
you found out. So you found out that you're not actually a superhero like Bruce Willis.
Well, they were quite impressed at what I'd achieved in 13 days. But no, it is not accurate to say that I am all better, because I'm not, but I'm sufficiently better that I didn't need to have a full cast put on, which I'm eternally grateful for.
So A, how the hell did you do it? And B, what is it that you actually did?
Right. There is a degree of cloudiness about what I actually did. You were very kind and suggested that beer may have been involved. A small amount of beer was involved, but in truth, the step shifted a bit, and my balance not being particularly good at the best of times, it didn't shift particularly far, but it was enough to push me over the edge of it. And I managed to land in such a way that I broke my second metatarsal, two bones in the ankle and my fibula in my left leg, and then peculiarly the little toe of my right leg in the space of a second or so. So I clearly went with the go big or go home school of landing. It may or may not surprise people, if you've been in this position before, that by far and away the most uncomfortable of those injuries is breaking your little toe, especially when you're then relying on that foot to try and thump you around when you're on crutches. But we're now making good progress. My sense of balance is still appalling. I'm going to say this in anticipation of receiving some general abuse, but if any of the people listening to this have some hints and tips on how to become more stable and more confident on crutches, if you've been on if you've used them long term or things like that, I am open to suggestions and advice, because at the moment I'm just generally worried that I'm going to do myself another injury just clattering around the house. I mean, right. I've got a stylish wheelchair for moving around longer distances. I mean, that's a thing of beauty. It was rented from the Red Cross, and it's every bit as elegant as you might imagine.
Didn't realize you could rent wheelchairs.
Neither did I, but I'll tell you what, I'm eternally bloody grateful you can. Yeah. So, yes, thank you for the words of support in the comments in the podcast, which I was supposed to have appeared in, but did this instead. Greatly appreciated. And yes, so making steady progress. So thanks, Phil.
Yeah, not a problem. And obviously, your goal for CES is to be able to walk, then. Otherwise, we're going to have to rent you one of these obese mobiles.
Rascal.
Yeah. put me in an obesicle. No, yeah. I will be walking. As I say, one of the great advantages of not having to put another cast on is that I'm able to get some rotational movement back into the ankle joint, and it just doesn't waste. I mean, even after 13 days, my calf muscle, such as it was already looking a bit sad. So it means I just don't have all of that wastage down, and I can hopefully be functioning pretty much normally by the end of September, which sounds a bit ridiculous, but that's
we're all getting old when wheelchair news replaces car news
or pushchair news. Yeah.
Oh no, we've got some car news. So Ed, did you win a cup for breaking your leg?
I did not.
Steve, did you win a cup for your shirt and t-shirt combination at BAFTA?
I did not.
Mark, did you win a cup for turning up with no games news?
No, I didn't.
I won a cup. First time in my life I've won anything.
Did it come out of a packet of Frosties?
No.
That's not winning.
I had to share it with 57 other people.
Oh, God. Was this
that's
at
a hell of a team?
Not at the annual Pony Boys gangbang or something.
Very close. It was at Ford Fair. So if you're not aware of what Ford Fair is, it was at Silverstone. It's the biggest collection of, well, basically Fiesta STs, Focus STs, Focus RSs. I mean, every field you looked in, there was hundreds of them. But I was there with Simply Mustangs UK. We had 58 Mustangs on the stand. Everything from 1970 onwards. There was a lot of new ones there, I will admit. But not one was the same. Everybody had done their own little mods and little differences and all that stuff. And out of 100 clubs, it's the biggest Ford event in Europe. We won best club stand and got a trophy for it. So there you go. First time I've won anything like that. I had only a small part in it, Ed. It was just one car that was there. Got to say, really interesting with all the Kevins and Garys and the Focuses and Fiestas. I mean, once you've seen one, you've seen them all, which having a walk around the stand, it got very samey very quickly. So having a stand full of Mustangs certainly stood out. And I'm not in any way having a go at anybody that's got a Fiesta ST or Focus RS or anything like that. No, it's just you even had separate clubs for the orange ones and the other colours. I mean, it was ridiculous.
That's sounding vaguely racist.
I was going to say car apartheid, this sounds like.
And if you are looking for a band name, you can get such a
Yeah, brilliant car apartheid, I love it. But yeah, first time I've ever done an event like that. And it was really good fun. And if you ever get the chance to pop along to something like that and you want to see fields full of Fiestas and Focuses and the odd Mustang here, then that's the biggest event. I'm doing another one in September at Santa Pod. So that'll be interesting as well. So the Fiesta ST is sitting, not being driven at the minute, Ed?
Oh, no, Kirsty's using it.
All right.
So no, both cars are seeing even, but again, in old people news, I tell you what, I am tremendously grateful that the other car in the household is a Ford C-Max, because that was one of the official Age UK and Disability UK accessibility vehicles. And if you are going to break the lower portion of your right leg, there are very few cars which are easier to get in and out of. So I'm quite grateful that we own that at the moment. And you can fit my wheelchair in the back as well. So,
oh, dear me.
Is there a chance that perhaps she just pushed you because she wanted the Fiesta?
I haven't considered that option. I don't think so, because my wife has had to essentially do an awful lot of looking after me.
Basically look after you, yeah.
Over the last 2 weeks. Yeah. So I think it would have been a very foolish move to have done it the way that she has. I mean, it's little things. Like in the run-up to this podcast, I am perfectly capable of going to the kitchen and making myself a cup of coffee. The act of carrying a cup of coffee back to where I'm now recording
not so easy.
No, not at all. I mean, because essentially, obviously, for very short distances, you can do a sort of Tiny Tim one crutch job, but that's not very stable or safe. So yeah, I can wander into the kitchen and cook stuff. I just then have to stare at it or eat it standing up in the kitchen, which isn't ideal. So
you should invest in a mini bar and a cafeter and just have done with it.
I won't lie. When I left hospital, I took a couple of those cardboard sort of wee bottle things with me. And I was looking at it in my lounge. I go, no, I'm not.
Hang on, cardboard? That doesn't sound very No,
they're treated cardboard. They're perfectly capable of holding your leavings. But I sort of looked at it in the context of my own lounge. Like, I am not having a slash in my own lounge. So I, summoned up the mental fortitude.
Haven't sunk that low yet.
wobbled off to the toilet. So, yeah. Although that said, I suppose if I'm going to humiliate myself, I may as well humiliate myself further. I do have one of those raised seat and armrest things for the loo, because it's perfectly possible to use a normal toilet. It's just the dangers involved in then getting back off it are understated. So, yeah.
Oh, this is class. So instead of sound advice, I think we're going to have a blog of how to deal with a broken leg.
I just like the phrase holding your leaving.
Right, anyway, I think we need to crack on and do a podcast. That's 50 Ooh. that's quarter of the time gone already of the hour. But yes, so obviously you can't escape the house, Ed, which means you're gonna be on every podcast going forward, and you didn't really leave the house much anyway, did you? So we'll move
on. No. My working life is not really terribly affected at all. The only thing I've got to do is we've got a very, I'm not going to say exactly what product it is. We've got a very, very exciting review product, which I'm pushing through in a short, in a quick turnaround thing. I've just got to work out how to take photos of it, because that's not as easy as it sounds. But I will do that. And we'll get it up. So otherwise, my life continues pretty much as before.
Okay. The shakiest review photos you've ever seen.
Yeah, I'll be done on my phone.
Like normal, then.
Do you want to bite me for this? I'm sorry. My photos are immeasurably superior to yours. I'm getting HG Wells about this. So, yeah.
Right, so moving on, because we really should move on to a podcast. So current competitions, Mark's going to tell us all about it.
Okay, you can win a Scan Cydia S1 Nero Luxury Gaming Chair, and that one runs till 30th of August. Also closing 30th of August, you can win a Zerotech Dobby Mini Selfie Quadcopter, courtesy of GearBest. And we've also got a pair of NAD Viso HP30 headphones, courtesy of Seven Oak Sound and Vision, and that one closes on the 20th of September.
And previous competition winners?
Yes. I like the username, Paul Little Legs. Won The Lost City of Zed on Blu-ray. Very literal.
Good. Thanks very much for that, Mark. So let's move on to hardware news. So ATI have acquired Datasat Digital Entertainment. Interesting one, this one, Steve, because Datasat seems to be getting broken up into little pieces and sold off and acquired by other companies. And obviously Datasat used to be DTS Cinema.
DTS Digital Cinema, yeah.
Yeah, so interesting that these companies are now being acquired. And obviously Datasat Digital Entertainment, that is the company that builds the processors and amplifiers.
Yeah, I mean, it seems as if, I mean, over the last few years, Datasat have been shifting their emphasis more away from the cinema side of things to making processors for consumers as well. So this might actually tie in quite nicely. Obviously, ATI own things like Theta, so they've got a long history of making high-end consumer processors. So I guess that maybe that will tie in with their priorities. It looks as if maybe on the cinema side of things, Dolby seems to be running the roost these days with Atmos. You've got other things like you mentioned a couple of weeks ago with IMAX, they had their own sound systems. And obviously DTS themselves have been making inroads back into cinemas again now that their period when they couldn't do that after the sale of DTS Digital Cinema to Datasat happened. There was, I think, there must have been a period when they weren't allowed basically to go back into cinemas, but they've been doing it themselves. But it seems that in the meantime, while that's been going on, Datasat have been sort of moving more into the making processors for consumers. Obviously, the processors that they make for the cinemas, they've taken that already and turned it into a consumer version, which I reviewed a few years back and was absolutely stunning. So, yeah, that might be a good fit. But you're right, Phil. I mean, it doesn't seem as though the data set has been broken up into bits and pieces and sold off. And I guess it just reflects the changing situation in both the cinema and at home.
Yeah, well, it was a few years ago we actually visited Datasat in the UK. They no longer exist. It's all gone. That building's all gone and it's moved on. And it's just in the States now, in California. So, yeah, it seems to have been a cost-cutting exercise and obviously moving product into different areas. We wish them well for the future, obviously, under ATI. Because, like you say, the products that we have tested and we have looked at have been absolutely stonking products. So you've got the RS20i, and then you've got the smaller, is it the RS10?
LS10.
Yeah, LS10 is it.
Yeah, I mean, they were amazing. I mean, you can tell its pedigree as a professional processor because the level of flexibility and setup and configuration you could do was absolutely amazing. It was I did enjoy my 3 months with the RS20i.
Yeah. Okay, right. So best of luck to Datasat on that one. Right, moving on. LG Ultra HD Blu-ray player. It was the last one that we were waiting on of the current bunch.
I thought I was out of the woods, but not quite, possibly.
I think we're not going to hang on, are we? We're gonna do the group test now. So, and anything else that's released after this point will be added to the group test. So there will be a big article. It's coming up very soon, probably in the next 3 weeks. So probably towards the end of August, we're going to have the biggest roundup of all the Ultra HD Blu-ray players that we've seen and that we've tested. It'll be the one-stop shop just to have a look and see which one would suit you. But the LG's come in, Steve. Any good?
Well, that's an interesting question, Phil. I think if you're interested, if your main priority is you want a player that can support Dolby Vision because you've got a Dolby Vision display, like say maybe an LG OLED, and you don't want to shell out £649 on the Oppo, then yes, it's certainly the best option, because you can get it for £260. So you're going to get a Dolby Vision Ultra HD Blu-ray player for £260. So you literally could buy two UP970s and some discs for the cost of buying an Oppo. I should stress that LG haven't actually released the firmware update yet, but they probably announced that it's going to support Dolby Vision. They will be releasing it at some point. So it is coming, but as yet it hasn't happened. But it will be capable of supporting Dolby Vision. So that's its big selling point, basically. If you're not interested in Dolby Vision, if your TV doesn't support it, it's not your thing, then it's a pretty ropey player, I have to say. Clearly, I get the feeling that LG thought we've got to get a player out in the marketplace, because they were quite late to the party, a bit like Sony. And they thought it has to support Dolby Vision, because they obviously got this big relationship with Dolby in terms of lots of their products, and Dolby Atmos and Dolby Vision and all sorts of Dolby things. So they thought, they'll have Dolby Vision. But I think other than that, the brief for the designers and the engineers was pretty limited, because it's just a black plastic box. It's a full-size box. So if you like your players full-size, great, but it's a black plastic box. There's been absolutely no thought in terms of the design. And that's unusual, because I have seen some quite nicely designed players from LG in the past, but this is just a black plastic box. It does what you expect to do for a Blu-ray player. So it plays Ultra HD Blu-ray, it plays 2D and 3D Blu-ray, it plays CDs and DVDs. Obviously, it also supports Dolby Vision. Other than that, though, there's been no effort at all. So it's got two apps, Netflix and YouTube. There's no app store, so you can't add any more. So that's your lot. The whole the whole user interface looks really dated and sad and tired now. Its playback is reasonably responsive, but when you do put a disc in, it goes to a white screen. It just feels really antiquated. It's not too noisy. It's a little bit noisy when it's spinning a Ultra HD Blu-ray disc, but it depends on where you're sat relative to the machine. Remote control I quite like. At the rear, you've got two HDMI outputs. But it's got no DLNA support, so you can't stream from your home network. You can only stream stuff or play music from either a disc or from a connected USB. The CEC is almost non-existent. So when you plug it, if you turn it on, the TV doesn't go, oh, there's something attached to that HDMI input. Nothing happens. And this is with an LG TV attached to it. So, or if you turn on the player, it doesn't turn on the TV. So it's got no CEC controls whatsoever, which is surprising in a modern player. It just feels like they have made almost no effort whatsoever. Just wanted to put a player out there at a specific price point. So they've cut anything out they don't need just to get Dolby Vision out at a certain price point.
I was just going to say, it's a pity that it's plastic, because I actually quite like the styling of this one. I was quite interested in it. I quite like the very simple nature of it. I'd kind of hoped it would be, brushed steel or something.
No, it's not. It is quite plasticky. You're right. I personally don't mind a black plastic box, and I like the fact that it's full size, because it sits nicely on top of other products I've got, the same kind of size. So in that sense, it's not that disappointing. But it's got like these buttons on the front, control buttons. And obviously, you can use a remote, but they're in the shape of icons and they're black, so you actually can't see them most of the time unless you get up really close to the player. I just felt like the whole play. When you compare it to something like, say, the Pani or the Sony DX800 or the Samsung M9500, these are slick players. They've got loads of features, really great user interfaces. Comparing it to, say, the Samsung, for example. Okay, the Samsung doesn't play 3D Blu-rays, but it's just a thousand times slicker and looks more modern, and just the whole interface and the use of it is just completely different. So. Yeah, if you want Dolby Vision, it's the cheapest way of doing it. But if you don't, or you want any other things, it's a pretty limited, slightly tired-looking player, in my opinion. It's a bit disappointing, actually.
Did you see a Cambridge Audio one appeared this week?
That's what we were referring to at the beginning of this bit, Ed, when I said I've almost finished. Because, just as I thought I'd done the last player, Cambridge Audio announced one.
I mean, the only thing that's, I suppose, semi-noteworthy about this is... I haven't been paying as much attention to these things as perhaps I should, but this really appears to have gone full transport. There isn't a single analog connection to be found at any point.
Yeah, there aren't on most of them, actually, but I love the way they try to spin that as a positive thing. No DACs.
I mean, to be fair, most people aren't going to be using them, but it does mean that you're paying quite a lot of money for a product that,
it's going to be the same money as the Oppo. It's basically the Oppo. with the Cambridge Audio name on it.
Yeah. But no, as I say, it's if nothing else, it's healthy for the format if a couple more of these things come out. So
hey. Yeah. Okay, so that roundup, just keep your eyes peeled, be end of the month, beginning of September for all the currently available players. And like I say, we'll add others in because there's a Sony X1000 has been announced. And we were waiting to get a review sample for that one. We might be waiting a little bit of time for that one. So these will be added once we've seen them, and it'll be, like I say, the biggest list of the players, and you can go there and find out which one will suit you. Right, let's move on. We did talk about Oppo. We're going to talk about Oppo again because, Ed, you've been looking at their Sonica DAC.
Yes, I have been. The copy is up and available on the site. The Sonica is very closely related to the guts of the larger of the two 4K Blu-ray players that Steve looked at. But it's obviously removes all the Blu-ray playback. There's no physical media drive at all. So what you're left with is a USB DAC with additional coaxial optical inputs, which operates at both a line level and a remote control, a volume adjustable preamp volume level as well, with network streaming and Tidal and Spotify support, which was a bit of a mystery in some ways to Steve and I, because this, as I say, is incredibly close in application and appearance to the 4K players, but they do without Tidal and Spotify support, which seems a bit peculiar. This is an interesting product because when you take it out of the box, it's like, well, it doesn't look particularly special. It's nicely assembled. Don't be under any illusions about that. But Oppo's one of the most schizophrenic companies I know in this regard, in so much as they've turned in some truly outstanding bits of industrial design. And in with the headphones and the HA2 headphone amplifier and so on and so forth. And then the Blu-ray players is like very much down the line black box. This is in the latter category, but it is very nicely assembled. This is a product where what you listen to is fundamentally exactly what you should be getting off the particular mix of what you've decided to play. It's unconditionally stable. The network section is extremely well thought out. The USB section is extremely well thought out. This isn't necessarily so when you take admittedly something considerably more expensive like the Cord Hugo 2, and there's a sense of it feeling a bit special in terms of it being a bit quirky, and there is an extra sort of edge to its performance, which is noticeable, although you bloody well hope so, for the best part of £1,000 more. This is staggeringly capable. And it's one of those things where it's a head rather than heart purchase. But if you're happy with the fundamental tonal balance of the equipment you've already got, if you add this, it is not going to mess about with that tonal balance. And also, it served as the source for my review of the Acoustic Energy AE1 active speakers, and that as just a combined system would have been £1,800 less cabling, and it was stupidly good. I mean, just seriously, seriously fun to listen to, compact, easy to use, and seriously capable. So if you are, you know, if you'd read the sound advice piece about active speakers and you're thinking, oh, I quite like the idea of that, products like this Oppo in particular are just the perfect jump off points for you to look at using a pair of active speakers. If you've got no interest in vinyl, and to be fair, actually, the Oppo, provided that you don't mind converting the analog signal to a digital one, which I know is a bit of a no-go for some people, but actually, as far as I was concerned, it didn't make a huge amount of difference. But if you are fundamentally looking at majoring on digital, that makes for an absolutely superb system. That's an area where these products are exceptionally strong. This is, as I say, not the sort of products you lust over, but it is seriously good. And it got a bit of a kicking in another publication. And I just don't understand quite how that came about. But no, let's try that as a sentence. It's a very, very good product that does an awful lot of things extremely well. And if this is Oppo's, if you like, coping strategy for the gradual diminishment of sort of video disc formats, it augurs well for the future. It's a very, very good product.
The DAC, was that £799?
Yes.
Do you think at that price point then, there is some logic in maybe looking at buying the UDP 205 because you get essentially that DAC built into the player. Plus you also get not just two channel, but seven channel output. So there's two DACs, in fact, in that mm-hmm. player. And obviously you also get an Ultra HD Blu-ray player as well, top of all that. Does that start making a 1,300 quid price point look slightly more sensible given all those other factors?
It certainly makes more of an argument for that player to exist than you might first get as a perception. I mean, it's still an awful lot of money, and were it me, I'd probably still want to try and split those roles out a little bit. But no, it does mean that Oppo is in a particular field all of its own. It's a different product altogether. And yeah, I mean, obviously, you played about with it, Steve, and it's one of those things where your conclusion was that it's absolutely brilliant, but it's an awful lot of money, and you know that doesn't necessarily change that. With two channel being a bit different, not least because the projected lifespan of this DAC is going to be quite a bit longer. It's not suddenly going to be tied to a section of the player which, you know, runs the risk of obsolescence for one reason or another. I you know, £700-800, it's a lot of money, but you can see where they've spent it.
Is this one of the ones that it's smartphone app controlled rather than
Correct. Yes, there's no remote with it in the box. The Sonica app is on Android and iOS. It's really, really very well laid out and unconditionally stable. Little things like the wireless setup is all very, very easy to do. Just follow the prompts and it all works brilliantly. So, yeah. It's very impressive.
Okay, so that's the Oppo Sonica DAC. If you're wondering why Ed suddenly was out of breath halfway through that, I've just edited it because in between there, Ed had to go see if somebody was at the door.
And they weren't. So I still have unbridled joy of doing that again at some point in this podcast.
So, hooray. So if you're wondering why suddenly Ed was out of breath, that's why. Right, so the Sonica review is up there, as well as the sound advice on the homepage of the forums. Go and read those pieces because they are really good, Ed. Thank you very much for that. What else can we expect from you this month?
Right, we have got... well, I did allude to it earlier on. We have, after a minor delay, got a Name Unity Atom all-in-one system. It's sat in front of me at the moment. This is Name's brand new all-in-one system platform. This is the first of the products to break cover. And it's in many ways, this is the first second generation all-in-one system that a sort of high-end manufacturer has released. And all signs point to the fact that, yeah, that the game has moved on a little bit again. I have to work out how to take photos of it, but hopefully we can get that up next week, or rather the week that this podcast goes out, and you can judge for yourself on the findings. There is additional to that, a brand new turntable from Riga, because I like to mix and match my extremely cutting edge technology
Is this the carbon fiber one?
Planar 6. It's made out of
titanium.
Actually, do you want to be unglamorous? It's made out of building foam and funny plastic laminate.
All right.
But it's seriously impressive. And then after that, it's all about timings and what I can physically get in and out of the box, I'm afraid, guys. But there's... there is an outside chance I might be able to have a look at an NAD amplifier, which is, the spec list took about 25 minutes to read. So
I do like NAD or NAD, however you want to say it. I do like their products. Their Master Series products are, they're something else. Even just the packaging that they come in is, you know, you're buying a quality product. Really well prepared, really well screwed together, fantastic materials, and they sound good. Talking about products coming up, like buses, I've now got two more 4K DLP projectors to review. Both of them turned up this week. I thought there would be a bit more time between them. So as well as the Acer V9800, which I did last week, and the review's still on the homepage, I have another Acer that's turned up, which is a lot cheaper. So it may be better value. It's the V7850. So I think it's around $3,000, as is the Optoma UHD 65, which also turned up. And again, it's a 4K DLP. These are all using the same chip, which is the new 0.66-inch DLP, which does the pixel shift. If you want an argument as to how that works, go and have a look at the V9800 thread. It seems to have gone off on a tangent, and there's about 170 replies as to, no, it doesn't work that way, it works this way. So if that's the kind of conversation you want to have, there's a thread for you. Steve, you've got a bit of a monster in at the minute.
75-inch Sony XE94, yes. When it comes to TV, size does matter, and this is an absolute Godzilla of a telly. Yeah, so that's coming up. And hopefully after that, long last, after quite a while, I get another Samsung TV in as well.
Okay, cool. This Sony, what's the price on that? 75 inches of real estate is...
Yes, despite being a 75-inch Ultra HD 4K TV with HDR and Dolby Vision support, you can get it for a very reasonable £4,399.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, although, I mean, 75 inches, it is big and it sounds big, but actually, once you've been sitting with it for a while, though,
it's an unwritten rule of TVs. Once you get used to it, when you put something back up again, even it's if like it's relatively large, it looks like a postage stamp, yeah.
Yeah. That used to be the case a lot when I was reviewing TVs, and we're back in the days where 50 inches was big. Nowadays, I mean, I couldn't even get a 75 inch through the door, to be honest. But there, I think, is it a Fold?
Yes, it is. Yes. No, it's a bloody good telly. Yes, it's a Fold, full array, local dimming, 75 inch Ultra HD 4K HDR. And as I said, it will be getting a Dolby Vision update at some point in the near future as well. So, you know,
Would you go for one of these rather than a projector?
I tell you what, when you consider the fact that basically HDR is a non-starter when it comes to projectors, because they just haven't got the peak brightness to deliver it in the way it's meant to be seen, and 75 inches is a pretty big screen, particularly when you're sat relatively close to it, we are moving into territory now where the argument for buying a TV over a projector, even for someone like me who is a projector fan, starts to make a lot of sense.
I'm just thinking, if you've got a smaller room or you're converting a garage, let's say a garage-sized room, into a dedicated cinema room, a 75-inch TV kind of makes more sense than a 90- or 100-inch projection screen, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, particularly if you want really good HDR performance, because, you know, you're just not going to get that kind of performance from a projector. You know what projectors are like. Even projectors that do support HDR, and even some quite bright ones, the only projector I've seen that's delivered what I would consider to be a genuinely decent HDR performance has been the £35,000 Z1. So, yeah, I think, you know, bang for buck, if you can get these big screen sizes in, and I was watching a life on it, and it looked absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I was quite enjoying it, actually. It's not often I watch films, you know, unless it's testing, but I put it on for a bit of testing and ended up watching the whole film just because I was really enjoying it. The picture looks so good.
Yeah. Okay, well, again, there's an argument to be had for that, and I'm sure it'll stimulate some conversation on the forums. If you've got a view on that, then why not add that to this podcast thread that's in the podcast forum. Right, so moving on, just to wrap up on hardware very quickly, Steve, because the review is already on the homepage, and if people want to know about it, they can go and read the review. But you've been looking at Denon's new Heos system, the AVR.
Yeah, it's their Heos AVR. So it's like, you know, they've got this whole range of Heos multi-room products, and this is their AVR, AV receiver, that goes within this product range. Interesting product, because it does address something that we've talked about quite a bit in the past, which is a lot of people who aren't AV enthusiasts are quite often don't get AVRs because they find them intimidating. You know, they've got this, you know, fronts covered in buttons and drop-down flaps full of buttons and big dials, and on the back there's thousands and thousands of connections, most of which you're never going to use. And they just think, oh, I don't want to get involved in that, it's too complicated. So the Heos AVR is an attempt to deliver a lifestyle product that can still give you a 5.1 experience, but without necessarily being as intimidating. So the front panel is, you know, just completely blank apart from a volume dial. The rear, you've got four HDMI inputs and an HDMI output, and, you know, and like an optical digital and a coaxial, but they've kept it very simple on the back. There's no display on the front. There's no loads of buttons. They have gone a little bit too far with the remote control, which is slightly too simple, but that's irrelevant really, because the whole idea is this thing's completely controlled by the Heos app. And there's no on-screen display like that. You just do it all through the app. And the big selling point is that not only can you run 5.1 channel because it's got five channels built in, but also you can use Heos speakers, the Heos subwoofer and the Heos 1 or Heos 2 wireless speakers as surround speakers. So you can actually run a 5.1 system with wired front three channels and wireless rears and wireless sub. And it works really well. And so from that perspective, you know, if you are interested in the 5.1 sound, but you don't want something that's too complicated, you don't want lots of wires over your lounge, this is a real genuine alternative.
It's a real real step up from a conversation we had a few weeks ago, which was about soundbars. This is the next logical step from the soundbar to this, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's a very interesting idea. I think it's a really interesting product from Denon. I think they've addressed a lot of issues and tried to create something that meets the needs of a wider audience than people that would normally buy an AVR. The only sort of downside I've got for it, it works really well. I loved it, but it's £799. And they're their own worst enemy here, because for that same money, if you do want an AVR, you could get the X4 300, which has Heos module built into it, but you know, it has nine channels, Dolby Atmos, DTSX, you know, the whole shebang for the same price. So obviously, if you're into AVRs and you're an enthusiast, then it's not
aimed at that market anyway. This is a lifestyle product. It's aimed at people that are maybe downsizing or who just want to, like I say, take that next logical step up from the soundbar to something that's not as complicated, but gives them a little bit more in terms of channels and so on. So anyway, the review's up on the homepage for that one. If you want to read a little bit more about it, want to find out a bit more, and you want to ask Steve any questions about it, there's a thread attached to that as well, so you can add your comments to it. So that's on the homepage. That's hardware news for this week. And coming up next is movie news. Right, so let's move on to movie news. And it's the middle of the month, so let's have a look at the scores in terms of Limitless card. And I'm in the money. I've been to see two films already at the top rate, so it was £10 a ticket to get in if I'd paid. So I'm £2 up at the minute. You, Steve?
Yeah, I'm well in the money. I've seen three films so far this month.
Right, so let's talk about some of those films. And the first one is Valerian and the something 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 of planets, whatever.
Something.
City of a Thousand Planets.
Yeah, what a strange title. What a strange film. In parts, I adored it. In other parts, it's an absolute shocking mess. It's one of these films where the director has been working on it for a couple of decades. It's his
pet. He was about 14, I suggest, by some of the dialogue.
It's his pet project. It's the one that he's always wanted to get made. And there's the genesis of some really good ideas, but the problem is there's too many ideas and there's too many of them added on into this and on the screen, which bloats the whole thing out, which slows the pace. And in some areas, it's there just for the sake of being there, where it completely and utterly destroys any plot or any pacing to the movie. And I've got to say, some of it really is a mess in terms of, like you say, dialogue, pacing, you know, where this thing's going. It's one of these cases, a bit like Peter Jackson, where if it was given to another editor and the director had no input in the edit, it would be a far slicker, more entertaining movie, because there is some absolutely brilliant ideas in there, and the cinematography is absolutely gorgeous. The effects are amazing. The design, you can tell it's a Besson movie just from the design. It's got elements of The Fifth Element in there in terms of some of the aliens and that kind of thing. It's simplistic where it needs to be simplistic, and I don't hate it for that, because it's a Luc Besson film. You expect that. It's just a mess in the middle, and pacing's all over the place. And
is it designed to start a franchise, or is it a standalone thing?
No, I think it's a standalone thing. It's like I say, it's a pet project thing where, you know, he's been wanting to make this for a very, very long time. And now that he's got the clout that he has, he's been able to persuade studios and investors to invest $200 million. And you know, I don't hate it. This is the thing. It's, there are elements in there that are really, really good. I quite like the stars in it, although the dialogue in some places is a bit, there is the genesis of a good idea there, and I think giving it to another editor to make sense of it and to chop huge sections. I mean, there's some characters that there's absolutely no need for them to be there, you know what I mean, for the plot and whatever. It's just a case of he's had this idea and he wants to get this on screen, and because he wants to have it in there, like Peter Jackson with King Kong and with the Hobbit movies, he's taken liberties with the audience, basically. But cinematography-wise, effects-wise, yeah, it looks beautiful.
Yeah, there's no question that 200 million quid's up on the screen, isn't it?
Yeah, totally, totally.
It's just, I think it suffers from having too many ideas. It's like they've crammed enough ideas for 12 films into one movie.
Exactly.
I know it's based on a French comic book. He's obviously thought, right, I'm going to get one roll of the dice here. And given its box office performance, this is the one roll of the dice. He's trying to shove as much as he possibly can.
Mind saying that, the screen I was in was full.
Mine was empty. I was the only one in it.
Right. Okay. Well,
I was the only one there.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I'm in the Metro Centre, so a huge footfall in that place. So, and it was a wet afternoon, so maybe just people decided they're going to the cinema. But
did you go and see it in 2D or 3D?
I saw it in 2D.
Yeah.
2D screen. I didn't really want to go and see 3D. But I've got to say, it does look beautiful. There is a good story that could have been told very, very quickly within an hour and a half easily, if not shorter than that. And it would have been a lot faster paced, a lot more exciting. And it would still have looked beautiful, and it would still have had amazing effects. And it maybe could have kicked on a franchise at the end of it. It's just, like you say, And like I alluded to, it's a pet project, and he's wanted to get everything on the screen that he can, and it ruins it for that. It doesn't ruin it; it just makes it a bit of a mess. There's elements in there that I really, really like, and I think when you get on the UHD, it's going to look superb.
Yeah.
And the sound mix and the score—I really like the score as well. It stood out in a lot of films these days. The score kind of just washes over you, and you don't really notice it. But I really noticed it in this one. So. Yeah, there's some really, really good elements in there. There's some humour, but it's just a bloated mess in the
middle.
It
needed to lose half an hour, didn't it? It needed to lose half an hour. Like, and it would have been a great, tight, enjoyable hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, it's a bit like a podcast, you know.
Yeah, quite. I didn't find the leads as annoying as I thought I would. I mean, they didn't have much in the way of chemistry, but even Carla Delevingne, she's not great. Shakespeare's an actress, but she handled... it's not like she was required to do much in the way of acting anyway, other than run around and look pretty. So, yeah, the dialogue was a bit ropey. That sort of attempted sort of like, you know, witty sparring between the pair of them just fell flat most of the time because they didn't have any chemistry and the dialogue wasn't very good. If you compare that to something that was written by, say, just Joss Whedon, for example, where he can deliver those zingers left, right, and centre, like a bit, it just didn't have that level. It could have done with a rewrite by someone, dialogue rewrite by somebody who was better at doing dialogue. Yeah.
I'm gonna mention something here, and it might be a light-ish spoiler. So if you don't want to hear this, just fast forward 15 seconds. What really annoyed me was the way that people got killed, and it was like, meh, they didn't care. You know, people were getting wiped out left, right, and centre, and there was no second thought given to them. Yet the whole plot of this film was about saving life form.
Yeah,
they were quite happy for people to get blown away. Their comrades and stuff, and they never thought twice about it. Right, you can come back now. It's safe to come back. That really annoyed me. That really narked me.
Yeah, true. They did seem to be that seemed to be the case. But like you say, some of the ideas, in fact, I love the idea of the interdimensional market, for example, where you were one part of you was in one dimension and another part of you was another. There were some really great ideas in there. And
brilliant ideas,
It was. It just felt like it was like a meal. You know, there was just too much on the plate, and you ended up feeling a bit sick afterwards.
Yeah, I think it'll get more of an audience on home release because you can take a break, or you'll find your favorite bits and you'll keep going back to those favorite bits on the disc. You know, as a demo scene, and it is demo material. It will be absolutely demo material when it comes out on disc. Yeah. So I'd probably give it a 6 out of 10, maybe a 6.5 if I was stretching it. What about you, Steve?
Yeah, I'd be the same, I think. Yes. Yeah. 6.5.
I'll tell you what I did love. I had no intention of going to see it, but I went to see it last night. I wanted to see it after seeing the trailer, and then I thought it'd be great because we can talk about it on the podcast. And that's Atomic Blonde. What
brilliant.
What a brilliant film. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was hooked. Again, it's one of these cases where the pacing was right, the length was right, the story was perfectly told. It was brutal. I mean,
absolutely
I was
brutal. The fight sequences are fantastic.
Some of the gasps from the audience I saw it with, and again, it was another full screening. Some of the gasps. There was some genuinely funny humour in there. I mean, some of the darkest, funniest humour I've seen on screen since the original sort of Tarantino stuff came around. You're in dire straits, or the character's in dire straits, and then something funny happens, and it's that dark, sickly sense of humour, but it is brutal. It captures a time period perfectly.
Great soundtrack.
The soundtrack, it's up there with Baby Driver in terms of music choice. I mean, the music supervisor needs to be congratulated on this one. It's brilliant the way it uses that whole year, you know, 1989, the aspects that were happening in the news, mixing it in with the plot and all the rest of it. Absolutely brilliant. I thoroughly enjoyed it and highly recommend you go and see it.
So the Charlize Theron really, really delivered as an action star in this. She totally believable that she's beating blokes up. You don't, because she's quite tall in real life, so you don't feel like, you know, a woman couldn't do that. You totally buy that she could beat the crap out of somebody.
But the thing was, though, there was that vulnerability with all the characters as well. And, you know, there was that point in the film where it starts doing things where you think, right, nobody's safe here. Absolutely, and that gets you on your edge of your seat. Again, we're not going to spoil it for people, but there are certain characters in there that where that happens, and you think, oh, Jesus, where are they going with this? And she's covered in bruises and battered to hell. And that's no spoiler, that's in the trailer, and I don't consider a trailer a spoiler. And there's the vulnerability
It's at the very beginning of the film, isn't it? The first time you see it, she's having a bath and just beaten to a pulp.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in Cass's review, he was talking about it being tonally unbalanced, but I didn't feel that at all. It's not meant to be a comedy. There is dark elements of dark humour. It's got a comic book sensibility about it, because obviously it's based on a graphic novel, but I just thought it was brilliant. And also, he thought it was too long. Again, I thought it was perfectly paced.
I think maybe that was a case of because I'd seen Valerian before.
Yeah. I was the other way around, you see. I went from Atomic Blonde into Valerian and was like,
right.
And interesting, even though I saw Atomic Blonde at 6:40 screening, it was actually very full. So
absolutely packed. I was 7 o'clock screening last night, packed out. And like I say, audience participation as well.
Gasps at some of the violence.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could feel the tension in the audience as well, which obviously adds to the whole thing. So yeah, absolutely, go and see it. I thought it was really good. Up there with Baby Driver is one of my favourite films of the year so far.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a real treat. I wasn't expecting to enjoy it that much. And because Kaz is usually quite a big action movie fan, and he seemed a bit ambivalent towards it. So I went in with low expectations and absolutely thoroughly enjoyed it. It was fantastic.
Good stuff. Right, so Ed, you won't be going to the cinema. Mark, any of those take your interest? Sorry, Ed, but stating fact.
Ed doesn't go to the cinema even when he can.
I know.
Atomic Blonde, probably simply because of the fact that you've raved about the soundtrack. I think that kind of sells me on it. I do like something set in a slightly different time period, and so it's a little bit of nostalgia as well as kind of a decent film. But everything I hear about Valerian it's the kind of thing I think might end up as a little bit of a cult hit, something like that.
Yeah.
Not the kind of thing I'm going to go to the cinema to see, but that people will end up kind of saying, actually, you know, some of the ropey dialogue, you know, has a kind of charm to it. And in kind of, you know, 10 years time, people will kind of like it a bit more.
Yeah, I definitely think it's going to find its audience when it comes to home video. Definitely, it'll be
the go-to demo disc, won't it? Yeah. For lots of guys, I think.
Yeah, I think so. But if you're going to go to the cinema, go and see Atomic Blonde. That's providing that you like violence and it is brutal. Absolutely.
It was directed by the guy that directed John Wick, so that gives you an idea of what to expect.
It does. Although I would say it's well above John Wick 2 in terms of enjoyability. Although I enjoy John Wick 2, go and see this one. This is the one. Really good. Right, so let's move things on. Films opening on Friday, Steve.
We've got The Hitman's Bodyguard. I don't know, did you see the trailer for it before one of your screenings?
I did. I thought it was... the problem is he's too Deadpool in it for me.
Yeah. It looked funny, though. It looked like it would be fun.
I'm going to go and see it.
I'm going to go and see it, yes. Yeah. Yeah, basically the concept is that a hitman is... giving evidence in a trial for a war criminal, and he gets... basically, they try and kill him, and he ends up on the run. And the only person that can help him out is a bodyguard who he's got a history with, and there's antagonism there, and that kind of mismatch buddy thing that's been done for years. But it does look like it'd be quite funny, lots of action in it, etc. So that's up this Friday. And the other big release this Friday is The Dark Tower, which is a film adaptation of the series of novels by Stephen King.
I saw this. I saw the trailer for this, and first time I saw it, gunslinger thing and all the rest, and I thought, oh, ropey as hell. Second time I saw the trailer, I thought, I might actually give this a chance.
It's I haven't actually read all the Dark Tower books yet. I've only read about half of them because they are quite big, and it is like King's magnum opus, basically. It's his one massive work that ties in with all of his other works as well. Everything's all tied together in various ways. It's a huge series of books. Trying to distill that into a film isn't never going to be easy, but based upon what I've read and what I saw in the trailers, that they haven't done a great job, partly because it was written by Akiva Goldsman, who wrote Batman and Robin, so you just know you're obviously a loser from the start there. Casting wise, you know, Idris Elba, great, you know, I mean, fantastic as Ronan DeShane. And you've got Matthew McConaughey as the Man in Black. But I'll give it a go. I'm going to go and see it. But my hopes aren't high, just because I just think that their approach has been misguided from what I've read about how they've approached the story and their approach to it. And also, you know, I just think it's always going to be a difficult work to try and translate into a film, because, you know, the books are so dense and there's so much in them. But the concept's quite interesting. The idea of this kind of mythic world where gunslingers are like, you know, it's like a fantasy world, but where it's like if you mix Lord of the Rings with Once Upon a Time in the West or The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, kind of mix those together, and that's kind of the kind of world that King created.
But that's what he wanted to do, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It was those things specifically after he saw The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly that he realised what he wanted to do.
Mm. Yeah. And he succeeds in the books.
It's going to be interesting because I have no idea about the books. I have no idea about the story whatsoever. I'm going into this movie having no knowledge of that. So it'll be interesting to see what the views are, because obviously you do. You've read the books and you know what's what. So it'll be interesting to see what we take out of that, because again, going to go and see that because I've got to make sure I get my money back on my Limitless card. Mm. So if we can't go to the cinema and it's raining outside, which it's been doing a lot of this summer, in fact, have we had a summer? Blu-ray releases.
Yeah, not a classic week for Blu-ray releases, has to be said. You got The Smurfs, The Lost Village, which is also getting an Ultra HD Blu-ray release.
Yeah, and you'll be buying that.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
Oh, well, we'll have to have a whip around and buy it for you then.
It's quite good. It's not a great title, but at least it is getting an Ultra HD Blu-ray, because there seem to be fewer or less Blu-ray Ultra HD Blu-ray releases in this country than there has been of late. You know, there's only a couple of big releases coming up over the next month, so it's a bit distressing. Otherwise, we've got Going in Style coming out on Blu-ray, which is a remake of a film directed originally by Martin Brest, who made Beverly Hills Cop and Midnight Run. That was his first film. It's basically about three old geezers doing a robbery. And it's the only reason why I'm guessing that Michael Caine, who appears in this film, didn't appear in The Hatton Garden Job, because, you know, he was already doing a film about an old geezer doing a robbery. And you also got an Arrow release of Ronin on Blu-ray. And having proofed Kaz's review, I've actually ordered this, because I do remember quite enjoying the film. I haven't seen it in a long time. I know it's got a really fantastic car chase in it. It sounds like a really good disc, good picture and sound, good selection of extras. So I've ordered that. It comes out on Monday. So
it's the car chase has got some many, many wonderful features in it. You'll notice this shouldn't count as a spoiler. At many of the points where it appears that Robert De Niro is driving, and he manages to look incredibly nauseous for a man who's notionally in control of the vehicle. Obviously, he's sat on the equivalent to it being a left-hand drive vehicle, and it's a right-hand drive vehicle being driven by the other guy. And I think he threw up three or four times. Equally, there's another sequence where a vehicle is going against traffic, and all done entirely for real. And there's lots of headlight flashes. And all that means is one flash, I'm turning left. Two flashes, I'm turning right. And can you even begin to imagine just using that as the means of processing how you're going to swerve through? I mean, that's proper insanity. The only slight sad point is that they destroy a very early E36, I can't remember what generation. So and very early BMW M5 from that generation, complete with the aero spinner wheels, which is quite a rare thing in this day and age. Very sad.
Thanks for that, Morton correspondent.
Yeah, I thought I had to get something in, and obviously I'm doubly frustrated at the moment because I can't actually drive anything. So there you go.
Right. So we mentioned Ultra HD Blu-ray news, Steve. Anything there worth talking about?
There's been a couple of announcements. So we've got Wonder Woman, which is coming out on the 19th of September, or at least it's coming out in the States on 19th December. Hopefully it'll be coming out in the UK around about the same time, but I wouldn't bet on it. And also, Sony have announced they're releasing all three Batman in Black movies. That's going to be in December, September the 5th in the States. Nothing major. What is interesting is there's been some feedback from Disney about Dolby Vision. Apparently they do intend to use it on their discs at some point. The reason they didn't on Guardians of the Galaxy and also on the Pirates of the Caribbean film that's coming out soon is because they wanted the disc to be, you know, as good an experience as possible for consumers. They didn't want any problems with it, and there are apparently still some minor issues with encoding and actually creating and replicating Dolby Vision discs at the moment. So that's why it hasn't been used on their first couple of releases, but they do intend to use it going forward once all the various bugs have been sorted out. Yeah, and that's about it, really.
Okay, interesting. I was in HMV yesterday before I went into the cinema. I had 20 minutes to kill, and I thought I'll go and have a look at UHD Blu-rays because of your comments in previous weeks about releases slowing up and all the rest of it. All the new release stuff, in fact, some of the catalogue stuff like King Kong and King Kong Skull Island and a couple other discs, £25.
Oof, it's quite a lot of money.
Yeah, that's like all the major releases. The only one that was £20 was Life. The recent disc was Life. Everything else, £25, which you're not going to get anybody buying into a new format at that kind of money.
And you wonder why people aren't too bothered about the slight drop in quality and just streaming.
Yeah. Well, there is that. Or picking up the Blu-rays because, you know, you walk into HMV again, it's like £14 for the Blu-ray. Or if you're really lucky and you go a couple of weeks after the release, they're usually in the £5 for £30 offers. Yeah. You pick up on Blu-ray. You know, why go for the UHD?
Pick up the Blu-ray and take off my glasses.
Did you see that the announcement that Disney's pulling stuff out of Netflix?
Yeah.
Yep. Because they're gonna set up their own streaming network, which when you think about how many studios they have in their portfolio now, they'd be silly not to do it.
I don't know if I want to spend more money.
It's a worrying trend, isn't it? We don't want. You know, we won't really want one source for all of our stuff. If you've got to pay for Disney separately and Netflix and Amazon and Now TV.
Yeah, but you're just a consumer. You don't matter. You just don't understand this whole capitalist thing, Steve.
I understand why they're doing it. Yeah. I'm just saying from the point of view of the consumer, this is a worrying trend. I mean, people, you know, at least when you buy a disc, you buy your one disc, you've paid for that disc and you watch it whenever you want. You're not dependent on it being on a service, available on a service for any long period of time, or whether you've got to pay for another provider. We're all going to get f***ed going forward. That's what worries me.
If it ends up with everything kind of fragmenting, the worry is that you're going to end up with particular providers just moving towards their end of the market. So you'll have like one that'll be specifically for drama and one that will be, you know, Disney will be more kind of family friendly or something. You know, it's nobody wants to have to
Would you rather have a Sky who have the rights to everything and will charge you £100 a month? Or would you rather have all these different services competing for your interest?
Well, if it gets to the stage where £100 a month is cheaper than having to duck in and out of everyone else's, I think Sky will be the last people laughing. This is my concern. I mean, ultimately, one of the success of Netflix and Amazon, I mean, Netflix's original success was built around taking a vast quantity of individually low value content and making it available on a largely global platform. If you start splintering those platforms out, the old school content providers will be the only people that win.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, you've got something like Disney. Disney's going to be worth the money just because of the studios that they have behind it. And they're going to be competing against Netflix and Amazon and whoever else is going to come into this marketplace. I mean, Disney doing it, it makes sense. I don't think other studios like 20th Century Fox or MGM could get away with it. And is there a lot of their content on Netflix anyway? I don't think there's a huge amount of... I think there maybe is in the States, but over here, I don't recall seeing that much Disney content on Netflix anyway.
No, that is true. I mean, if they start removing it from providers like Sky, that's a bit more of an interesting one, because on balance I'm still not likely to chop a Sky subscription to make up the money for buying the Disney one. So it's like, okay, well fine, I'll live without Disney. I mean, I'm trying to convince my son that they're evil anyway, so...
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's the way things are going to go. And you just have to look at Sky as well. I mean, they ran an advert last night at the cinema for...
Oh, the sport?
No, not the sport. It was Sky Atlantic. It was for a new series, and it was a strange trailer. It was almost like 3 minutes long. They showed you like the start of this series, and it looks a bit like the Walking Dead, but not quite the Walking Dead. If you know what I mean, it's like an abandoned fuel station. Something
what's
like
it
this.
Called?
I can't remember. I really can't remember.
Great advert.
I just remember the tagline at the end was, "It's on Sky Atlantic, and all the episodes will be available on this set date." So unlike Sky and normally where you get one episode a week, they are doing the Netflix thing and dropping the lot in one go.
To be fair, they have been doing that with some more of their content. The Fortitude seasons were available to watch, to binge watch if you want to do so, but they then put them in the schedule every week for those of us that, you know, just didn't want to binge.
I think the BBC did that as well. Didn't they do that with Top of the Lake? They put it all available on iPlayer to binge watch if you wanted, or you could watch it as it was broadcast. It's seemed to be a bit of a trend there for that.
Yeah. I mean, I was sitting on my phone at the time, so that's why I do that during the adverts. I only put my phone away when the trailers come on. So I was just flicking, you know, I noticed it was on for a while, and then I caught the end title, which said Sky Atlantic, and they were going to drop everything. And I thought, that's interesting, because... You know, Sky have never done that in the past. If they're now starting to do that and copy Netflix, then that's interesting, seeing how trends are.
Did I hear that Facebook have got some TV channel coming out as well, apparently?
That'll just be 50,000 videos of cats.
Yeah, they're going to start doing video content, but they already do. It's just, you know, you kind of scroll past it. And so it's going to be more kind of YouTube-like, I think, than anything else.
It's just too much, isn't it? There's too much stuff. Last time we were on the podcast, too much stuff.
I can remember, you know, when you used to hear about the problems that Americans had with, you know, like cable boxes and so many different networks and that kind of thing, and thinking we've got it a lot easier in this country. But it's heading towards that with streaming services, where you will have, you know, you will end up just paying a separate provider who says we will give you access to all of these services, you know, and you have to pick certain packages. Because it's just going to fragment. It's, you know, it's the way that kind of everyone thinks they've got content that they should be paid slightly more for. So why not break it off? I mean, we've seen it in games with, you know, EA Access Service and stuff like that. You know, the bigger the kind of studio, publisher, whatever, they think that they're, what they've got should be monetized more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see the way that it's likely going to pan out. And, I mean,
I think you'll see Kodi boxes, sales of them shoot through the roof.
This is the other thing. Yeah, eventually, if you ask people to pay individually for everything, they'll pay individually for nothing.
Yeah. Well, it depends what the price is, though. You know what I mean? I mean, when Netflix first started, was it $4.99? Which was amazing value for what you were getting. I think it's now $8.99 if you want Ultra HD content and you want to play it on more than one device. I think that's what I'm paying every month. But even still, $8.99. It's great value for what you get, because what I normally find is I go into Netflix and I start flicking through and I think, oh, that looks interesting, I'll watch that later. Oh, that looks interesting, I'll watch that later. Oh, that looks interesting, I'll watch.
I always find something to watch on Netflix if I really try hard.
but sometimes I just look through and then I think, I'll watch something else, or I need to go and do this, and I'll switch it off, because it's just sometimes there's just too much choice.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh, well, I want to watch that one on the projector, so I kind of be asked to go and fire that up and wait half an hour, and you know what I mean? It's that's a great insight into my
first
life,
world problems,
isn't it? And on that bombshell, that's it for the podcast this week. We've spent so much time that there's subjects that are going to have to be moved over to next week. But my thanks to Steve Withers,
Chopper, Sick'em Boy.
Mark Hodgkinson wasn't here. Hopefully, he's not in trouble and he has a good anniversary. Ed Selly,
Jesus H. Bald Headed Christ.
And Mark Burring.
Don't call me any of your mother's pet names.
Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Bookmark AV Forums for latest reviews, news and videos. And of course, leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes if you enjoyed the show. And please do that, because it helps us climb up the charts on iTunes, and it means that new people can find the podcast and join in with us every week. I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again next week.